Welcome to Burning Out Hell.
What's up, guys? I am with an Irish man. It's actually not Desmond. I found another Irish man in New York. Crazy, wild. He's a hysterical comedian. I'm with Sean Donnelly, who I'm like looking at all the stuff you've done. You've been everywhere. Is it Devine or Divine?
I think it's Divine.
Adam Devine's house party. He's done The Half Hour, Broad City, Inside Amy Schumer, Comedy Central, Amazon. The credits are nonstop. Welcome to the Lower East Side.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so glorious to be here.
We're actually neighbors.
We are.
I
am a quasi neighbor. My girlfriend lives literally 10 floors below you.
I'm very excited to have you on because I feel like what I've heard of you on the comedy scene is that you've had like a real glow up.
What is a glow up? We should tell
you
people.
You almost just agreed with it regardless. You were like, yep. And I'm like, so you have HPV. I feel
A flare up.
You're like, yeah, flare up. It has been itching me lately.
A fiery flare up is a glow up. That's what. I think I know what a glow up. Here, we should also tell people I'm 40. I am 43. So,
which is a young, bushy eyed.
Yes.
Kid compared to Des.
Absolutely. Yes. I do. I think I know what a glow up is. It means that you. I thought it was like a makeover. Isn't it a makeover?
A glow up is It could be like physical or mental, but overall, you're like, oh wow, they've upgraded. Like they look
really?
Like they've upgraded their life. I know that you've like.
You've heard that about me.
Yeah. People are just like, Sean's looking really good right now. I think he's in like a good relationship. I think he's in a good place. But
oh
is that
God.
Just your is that just your Instagram or is it real?
So, yeah, I've hired multiple people to make that happen.
You were a crisis management PR.
I just rented a kid. No, that's true. I think. Okay, so I did. I lost weight. I was. People knew me as like a fat comic. I think, and I am. I'm not as fat now. Like a big guy. Everybody's like, you know,
yeah.
I'm the type of comic that people would send you. Like be like like fat dude pictures that kind of resemble you and go, this is you. Like it's like that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's you.
Like a fat guy with a beard.
Yeah, or the Irish thing where I would get there's a I've been sent this a million times that there's a baby who looks like it has a receding hairline and looks like it should have a beard. It looks very Irish and it's the same thing. It looks like an old timey bartender baby.
Uh-huh.
And I've been sent this thing 30 times in the past like however many years. So I think I was known as like the certain type of thing and then I did lose weight, which is good because I didn't want to die.
Yeah.
And then I am in a good relationship and a really good relationship.
Uh-huh.
And then I've also been dressing better, I guess.
I was about to say this outfit.
Yeah, is it good?
Who did it?
I did it.
Okay, can you talk to Des? Because this is like style. You guys, I have to explain. He's wearing these like sick Nikes with like cute socks. These like jogger type. What color is this?
It's like green, khaki green.
A green thing.
Yeah.
And then an adorable sweater with a duck on it.
Yes.
You look kind of hipster.
I do look hipster.
You look like you own a coffee shop.
Maybe. I think, you know what it is? The way I looked, people, if I wore hipster clothes ever, they were just like, oh, you are, like when hipsters look like dock workers.
Yeah.
I had the look, I was like, they're like, no, you just are
a dock worker,
a tugboat captain, you know, like, whatever it is. So, so I think, yeah, I think my goal has always been to be fashionable, but I never, it's a weird, you can't get wacky when you're a bigger guy. So once I lost some weight, I was buying.
Because
like,
you can
wrong.
Fit in more of the clothes that are like
I can
high
fit,
fashion.
Yeah, I can look. Yes, exactly. I was at my biggest. I was 270 was my biggest.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at my biggest and I went, this is how I decided. And I have done this on stage, so forgive me. But this really did happen.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my doctor because I was like, oh, I think I have diabetes. I was like, I'm pretty sure I have diabetes. And he checked his chart and he hadn't taken a blood test in like 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, how have we not? He freaked out in his office. And he's like, how have we not taken blood on you in 2 years? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, is it possible? I gave you the paperwork and you didn't go. And I'm like, it's possible.
1,000%.
So I kind of got worried. I was like, oh shit, I probably do have it. And so he took a blood test right there in his office, like an emergency blood test. And then 2 days later, he calls me up and he goes, I don't know how this is possible, but you're fine.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay, that hurts.
He's like, against all odds.
Against all any kind of rationality in the universe. So
he's like, I studied for 50 years and I've never seen something like this.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm gonna report this to my medical school. It's gonna come, we're gonna study it. So that was like first wake up call. And then I've always been bad at dieting, and I knew I had to do something because I was getting big. So I found out about the intermittent fasting thing, and it was like, it is still a fad, and it's trendy. But it really worked for me. Like somebody, a comic's wife told me that her husband lost like 60 pounds on it. And I was already kind of starting it. And it made me jump into it. Like,
what were your hours?
12 to 8. I still kind of do it. I haven't lost. I'm not down to what I want. I still have a little bit left of what I want to. And I have to go work out and stuff. But yeah.
I feel like in a comic's lifestyle, that is easier. Because if you're out late, you sleep late. The easiest way to intermittent fast for me is to let yourself sleep late. If you don't have a 9 to 5.
That's exactly
what it is. So I wake up at 11:30. Then it's easy to start 12 and then just stop at 8.
That's 100%. And like you have the growing pains aspect to it where like, you know, it was at the first month or whatever it was. And then you really do, I did plateau on it, but what it really did was it made me like, I'm like it. The unhealthiness was like, don't get me wrong, I wasn't eating like 3 pizzas a night.
Right? Yeah.
Not overeating. It was more like the quality of the food that I was eating. So yeah. Like, because of the intermittent fasting, what it made me do was go, hey, I wanna have grilled cheese, but I'm not gonna because I need it to tide me over for the next night. I need it to fill me up. So it kind of made me think differently about food. Like, I was like bad with food. I was raised bad with food. Soda addict. Like, soda was a big problem.
Yeah.
I stopped beer. I stopped soda. I do 90% less bread and less sugar.
Wow.
So that, and don't get me wrong, I still eat not the greatest.
Do you drink Diet Coke?
I don't. I do. I'll do a sip of soda maybe once a day, and then I do Topo Chico helped me, and then also there's this the thing that really helped was I was never a coffee drinker because I drank so much soda,
mm-hmm.
So I started drinking black coffee in the middle of the day to kind of like subside the appetite. But like I'm convinced the oral fixation of going like that with coffee, like picking it up to your lips, mm-hmm. made me think I was snacking. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
The motion of it. And it was like enough of a satisfaction not to go get a candy bar, not to go get chips or something like that.
Yeah.
So that helped. And then once I had the results from it, that happened over the course of time. Like, it was over the course of like a year that I lost it. But like, once I had that, I'm like, I want to feel this way.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. So that's where my glow up came from.
I'm obsessed with, we're obsessed with Sean's glow up. Like, I'm literally obsessed with you. And I also, this outfit, I'm like obsessed with.
Thank you so
and
much.
I need you to take Dez shopping with you. Not that Dez has a bad style, but like,
no,
I feel like
all, yeah.
I like your style.
Oh, thank you very much.
How would you describe it? What's your aesthetic?
I don't know. I guess.
What are the vibes?
You know what it is? And this is going to sound so corny, me saying this. I used to skateboard in high school, and I used to be a skateboarder in high school. I don't think I ever got rid of liking that style.
Yeah.
So I think anything that I go buy clothes-wise is within, but I have to keep it within the realm of me getting older and like,
yes,
what I look like. So this is a version of that.
Can you just explain skateboarding to me for a second? Because
sure.
I went to school on the Upper West Side. I go to Columbus Circle, and
yeah,
there's the fountain and everyone would skateboard. And I've watched that for hours and hours and hours. And I never saw one person land one thing.
That's
what the fuck are they doing?
They're trying to either board slide or rail slide the fountain, or they're trying to nose slide, or
they're doing just like they fling it up in the air and it like hits someone in the face. And
no,
like,
they're probably trying to 360 flip, which is
my thing.
And they're
is,
just not doing it well.
Is it is it kind of like comedy where it's like if you're killing all the time, you're not getting better. So like they're trying all the hard moves. Like you can't just make the moves all the time. Because I'm just like
It kind of is
skateboarding. I'm like, I've never seen someone do it well.
Yeah, well, you could, if you park yourself in a certain spot, like if back in the day there used to be the Brooklyn Banks, or there's probably, I don't even know where the spots are now in the city, but like,
this is a skateboarding culture podcast. So yes. Welcome. He's telling us the niche place. Okay, girls, write this down.
They're all like, we don't care. But
no, I love the detail.
But it's so funny that you said that, because I think it is similar to comedy, because it's a very lone wolf thing. It's very, it's by yourself. But you're trying to just go to that next level. So yeah, when they're trying something and you're like, they're completely messing this up, it's like bombing. It's like a little version of bombing.
Yeah.
And then what ends up, like, skateboarding even had a thing where everybody mastered, like, you know, the tricks got so done over and over again the regular way. You know how you can be, I don't know if you know this, you can either, the two stances are regular and goofy foot. So when I was skateboarding in the 90s, they started doing this thing called switchfoot, which is when you went the other way and then you just do all the same tricks that way because it was that much more impressive.
So it's like, why would I do the old tricks? It's like, you're not going to do the classics all the time.
No, they still do them. But like, if, okay, so a switch version of that trick to somebody in skateboarding would be that much more impressive. So they're probably trying something switch when you're seeing the board just go up because they're so bad at it.
Girls, we just learned a lot. So the world will never be the same from this information we just got.
I just have all the worst topics for your audience.
No, you're killing. You're literally killing it. I also, one last thing about your weight. Because it is fascinating. When you were younger, were you overweight?
No, I wasn't. I was skinny. I started gaining weight when I was like 19. After I went to, after high school, into college. Started drinking a little bit. It got more and more. And then also I would just eat whatever because I didn't have that like healthy mindset from growing up because I guess I didn't need it. But we also, our family wasn't healthy.
I mean, the way teenage boys can eat.
Yes, absolutely. Like, if you saw me, like if you saw a picture of me when I was 16, you would be like, who is that?
Yeah.
And then it got bigger and bigger and I just, and then, yeah, I went till, this is like past couple years is when I lost the weight.
Are you loving yourself more now?
I do. I think it's made me more confident. Definitely more. I've been trying to be more assertive and more direct and more honest. So I think definitely losing the weight has done that.
Well, this is a great segue because you have a new podcast coming out called Brand New Jerks.
Yeah, it's already out. We've done like 10 episodes.
Oh, it's out. Okay, it's fucking out.
Yeah.
So you can listen to it now. And I asked you what it was about, and you said recovering people pleasers.
Yes.
So as you talking about you kind of changing people please, that's part of a glow up is, you know, being assertive, having boundaries. Are you a people pleaser?
I am. Traditionally, I am. So where I come from, me and my buddy Ray Zawadny, super funny comic from Pittsburgh, we host the show, and we both realized we're both the same where we were, from our childhood, like we are people pleasers. And what we want is to be more assertive. So that's where Brand New Jerks comes out of, because we're trying to learn how to be quote unquote jerks, which, you know, for lack of a better phrase, I think it just sounds funny. But so we have like a thing on the podcast called Jerk Store Moment, which is from Seinfeld, where George wants to go back and tell the guy from his job exactly what, like he has a line and he doesn't realize it until after the fact. We have Jerk Store Moment, which means you said what you wanted to say in the moment, or you asked for a thing you wouldn't have asked for, or you did. And then, like, we kind of like keep each other in check with that stuff.
That I love that. It's like a project and you have like goals.
And like, it's, you're kind of bragging and be like, oh, I did this assertive thing to make me get to that point of the point of confidence I want to be at.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I am a huge people pleaser. I say yes to everything. And it's interesting because, you immediately will think that people are going to hate you.
100%.
Like, I'm like, and now that person is going to tell all their friends that I'm just the worst.
I had to send an email to quit a job once that I had for like barely any time. And I was physically shaking. And I was physically, and I don't usually do that. And I was like, oh my God, just the fact of disappointing the people on the other end of the email.
Actually, in therapy, I've been working on something because I'm like that, especially you get to a point where a lot of people start asking you for things.
Right.
And at first you're like, well,
I get it.
Especially when like people think like you can give them something and then you just want to make everyone happy. And then my therapist calls it self-abandoning.
Ooh, that's interesting.
When I am changing how I feel to make other people feel better, you're self-abandoning yourself. And when you abandon yourself, that's going to give you anxiety because anxiety is when you're not in line with who you are.
It's changing who you are.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Because there's a thin line between, then you could like be guilty that you fuck someone over, or you could self-abandon and do everything you want for them. So it's finding that in between of not being a dick, but also not losing your morals or
100%.
Or even little things. Because also, at the end of the day, let's be honest, you could do anything for anyone. Where does the line of your own priorities, you know?
Well, it's funny, and it does come into the comedy world, and I think that's what you're talking about, because
sometimes,
tons of people in the comedy business that are probably asking you for favors, and they don't think it's that big of a deal, and your first instinct is like, you don't want to disappoint them, right? But you could turn around and do all of them, but like, first off, should you? Like, should you really, like, you do, like you said, that's a really good phrase, because it's like, but then I'll have no time left for me. And also, like, and to bring it to comedy terms, I've had people ask me for stuff in comedy that, and even at the level that I'm at, where it's like it's like they'll ask me for favors in comedy that I'm like, well, this is what I did to get that. Like it's usually like, can mm-hmm. you get me this thing in comedy or mm-hmm. this passed at this thing or that, and I'm like, well, I worked, I killed on these four shows and got recommended to this and got the guy had me do this and then audition for this and I did, like it's like, so just do that, like mm-hmm. do, you can do that if you put the time into it and mm-hmm. then and you do well. So I get a, it's, I don't, you don't want to be angry about it, but you're like a little bit like, no, do it, it's proper. Like, don't get me wrong, I'll do favors for people and yeah. I'll try to help out, but I think it's good to have boundaries of those things. And I think the bigger you become, like, you're huge, you got your pocket, you got all your stuff, so it's like, oh, the numbers just must go through the roof with the amount of times you're being asked.
I just know the first time I was on I did TV, the amount of people that just were asking me for coffee got weird. Where like people I know are just like, oh, can we get coffee? Like, to, and then I realized like, oh, it's not because they actually necessarily like me, but like they want to be like, oh, I just got coffee with Hannah. And then next thing you know, you're getting coffee with everyone and you have no time for yourself anything. And you're dying. But then also this industry, you're hot 1 second and then what? You have like a bad episode or a bad set or some whatever happens to you. And then suddenly those people are not bothering you.
Right.
And then you realize how like it was, it's also fickle.
It's fleeting.
And fleeting.
Yes.
That you're like, I just have to do what's right for me.
The weird, absolutely. And I think the weird part about comedy is that there is no office. So it's very hard, especially coming out, because you started comedy here. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to differentiate the friends and the comedy friends. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the comedy friends aren't real friends, but you will see. I had a moment of realization recently where I had a guy who was in comedy that I thought was like a friend mm-hmm. that I did ask for something from and I did not get it. And I really hurt me on a friend level.
Yeah.
And what it did was make me set that boundary to go, oh no, I have to not, it sounds really like kind of like bitter to say like, I won't expect anything, but I don't mean it that way. I just mean like, oh, like setting the comedy office and not expecting as much as you do, but also like not losing like, not hope or like, you know, any kind of like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
and also sometimes like him not doing that for you doesn't mean he doesn't like reflect how much he likes you as a person. It's like his own comedy brain where he can be weird.
100%.
You know what I mean?
That's exactly what
it was. It's literally two different things.
Exactly.
But you take that shit personally because you're talking about you as a human.
And I, 100%. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. And I think that, but that's why I say, like you said, your time is valuable. I think I have a hard time realizing that as well, because I will try to help people out or get on the phone or do it. And then you're like, oh no, you kind of, setting those boundaries, I think, makes you seem more, I think like you said with the self-abandonment, where it's like you're not going to have those little tiny explosions of anxiety in your head because you're like, oh, I wasn't rude about it. I said what I wanted to say, and you can kind of take this as you take it.
But it's also finding out how you say what you want to say. Like, I'm a little brutally, like I can only be honest. I don't know how to lie. So when people are like, can you do this? I'm always like, do I have to come up with like, my dog is sick or like, and then I don't know how to do that. And then I'm like, so I just say no?
Yeah.
I can't just say, that is so like brutal to just be like, I don't want to tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think recently, I think with mental health being more of a thing, saying stuff like, you know, my battery's out kind of thing.
Yes. I think that works. I also think that if you're telling like, I think what happens in my brain, and this is where the people pleaser thing comes in, you think their response is going to be so much bigger than it actually will
be.
True. Because you saying, hey, listen, I'm so fried. I just had to go crash. You know, I don't even say, do you say sorry? I don't even say sorry anymore.
Well, I'm a girl.
That's another big thing.
I also put exclamation marks and emojis with it. I have to do a whole thing. Oh, how it must be to be a man. You're like, I've never said sorry in my life, actually.
No, I am not like that. I was the sorry guy. I was the got to put an exclamation point next to a text thing, and I'm trying to get better at that.
Well, that's
as well.
What they tell like women in the workplace to these little
stop
things.
Doing
to stop
that.
Saying sorry. Stop saying there's certain terms that just like kind of demean. And I realized someone said like when you're kind of late, to not say sorry, to just be like, there's different words of how you can say it. But also, I am sorry if I'm late.
Well, I think we actually are sorry. You say sorry.
But you are right. We're like canceling plans. The amount of times I cancel and someone's like, thank God I didn't want to go either. And you're like, fuck well, yeah.
Or somebody, I think even Todd Barry used to have a joke about somebody who you want to cancel and they cancel before. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, like the heavens parted. Like,
someone talked about an app for plans. It might be a dating app where like you both put in if you really want to go to the plan. And then if you both said no, it'll cancel it. But if only one of you said no, nothing will happen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like there's some dating app. So you can put in that you don't want to go tonight, but unless you both say no, it'll
still
happen. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Like a scheduling app.
So you everything just goes away.
Yeah.
It's just
off your calendar.
It's like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but for like in a very small scale.
Exactly. there's also something too with the people pleasing where you connect your self-worth with what you can like do for people, if that makes sense. Like growing up with sports, I felt I was a tennis player and I felt like the more I won, the more people liked me. So I always associated success with like being lovable.
Yeah.
Where it's like people pleasing, you have to understand that like your self-worth and being lovable is not based on doing everything for everyone all the time.
Right. Yes.
Which is a story you're telling yourself. Like you have to shift the narrative in your brain of what makes someone likable.
Yes, I think 100%. Like, I think, or maybe it's the thing of I am likable. Like, I think it's you get to a certain age, you should be like, yeah, I think there's enough evidence. Just I'm likable the way that I am. I don't have to overdo it.
Yeah.
Like the over apologizing or the oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense to me.
And I also think the right people around you will respond to. You're also the energy. I feel like people are more attracted to people who aren't constantly like being like, please like me, please like me, please.
Yes. I think
you're
right.
And that comes from like a confidence in yourself that you don't. It's like when you don't need friends, you get friends. Or like when you don't want a significant other, people are interested.
100%. And also like I in therapy, I've tried to describe this where I'm like, there's people that are more aware of like self-aware and healthier mentally, not even called mentally, but as far as like assertiveness wise, mm-hmm. I would love to just like that aren't thinking about 15 things that happened in the week. That did I say the right thing here? Did I do this? Did I like overthinking? I would love. That's the goal that I would want. The just living, like the worrying about what you want in that moment. Like, mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I live and I feed myself and I take showers. But I'm saying like the idea where all the stuff from 3 days ago is not even in my brain as I go forward.
That's so funny because we were just at Moon Tower at this comedy festival in Austin. That's so fun and it's a vibe and I feel like. You're kind of on the whole time. You're having fun. And by the way, I love your energy. I just want to let you know.
Thank you.
I remember telling Des.
I love yours too.
Thank you. I said, Sean has the best laugh. Like when you laugh, like the whole room is great. And it just, you're very easygoing and good energy. And I feel like at these festivals, you're dealing with a lot of different energies. And I'll like, one night, I remember I felt like I was killing. I was like pounding people. I was making laughs. And then you have one interaction where someone's not matching it.
Yes.
You go back to the hotel and you're like, oh God, everyone fucking thought I was annoying. I was annoying. Why did I say that? Like one person was like distracted on their phone and like didn't say hi back. And I'm like, oh no. Oh no. And I told another comic that and they're like, that's what I did last night. And that's the hard part about social gatherings that you get anxious before. And then you have the post anxiety of everything you said throughout it. What was your experience in the Moon Tower socially?
Well, I fell drunk and probably my fear was that everybody was whispering that I was a drunk that fell. Like it was so bad.
Oh, the Irish guy.
You can get drunk, but the minute you fall, it's like bad. But I'm like, I shouldn't give a shit. But I did. The next morning I was like, I fell and I hurt my leg when I was there. And that's so also like it's a weird 40-year-old thing to do. So like it's like
also like you always want to be fun and it's the first way to ruin a party is to be like, ow.
Yeah, yes.
Ow, wow.
Yes. Right, exactly. So I was like trying to like
be cool with the guys.
Climb it up and to be cool and limp around. And people are like, what happened? I'm like, I twisted my knee. It's not a big deal. And they're like, yeah, I heard. Are you okay? I'm like, shit. That's going to be a thing. It's a thing. Those things do have things.
And for people like, who weren't there, the stairs were actually very complicated. And I was, because I know that, because I was wearing these awkward clogs and I almost fell multiple times.
Okay, all right. That makes me feel so much better.
But I didn't fall. No one is talking about it like they are with yours now.
Right.
I laughed because anyone could fall downstairs, and I laughed because I was mad I missed it. It must have been hilarious.
It was probably kind of funny. It wasn't like a pratfall all the way down the stairs, but it was a couple stairs fall, twist the knee. Mm-hmm. It's probably funny.
Did anyone help you up?
Yes, people came over and helped me up, but I felt like a giant jackass. And you never want to. Yeah, you can be the Irish drunk guy, but you know what it was? It made me realize, like you said, there's different energies at those things. So I think I still have this, like, we're all buddies. Let's all hang out and get loaded together thing. But you're right. You walk into these rooms that have, especially now, they mashed up Moon Tower with JFL, which is Just for Laughs, if people don't know, which is like a big brand in comedy festivals. And I'm thinking, hey, I'm like, hey, you got to be Gregorius and like, hey, let's do something. And then there are a lot of weird energies of people who don't want to do that. That's fine.
Someone might have like just had a rough spot and they're sitting. So you don't know what's going on, but it's kind of, it's hard to turn it off once you're like feeling good about stuff.
Yeah.
But, and also our work is so aligned with our personality. Like, for example, if we were accountants, who cares if people don't think we're charming? It's like, yes. I'm an accountant. Where ours, like, if you have a weird interaction, you might be like, oh, they're like, fucking Hannah, she thinks she's, you know, witty. That was fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And then in your head, you're like, oh, they're never going to book me on their show. Fuck. From just like a water cooler conversation.
Well, that's why I always had it like, the things I had in my head were like, I always wanted to do well on stage, never kiss anybody's ass, but still be fun. That was always my goals in comedy. Yeah, I never wanted to be corny, never wanted to kiss anybody's ass. Didn't want that part of me of what these things can be when you're there, because 99% of it is that. It's people that are cool enough, they're cool, they hang out, whatever it is. But you do have instances of, you're like, oh God, this is unbearable as far as like the big, either big timing goes, whatever it is. But in doing that, I took the, hey, I'm going to be the fun part a little too hardcore, and that's a problem too, and I need to explore that
with your comedy and your glow up and your not people pleasing. How has that this affected your comedy voice? Because I do have to say, like, being having that character for so long of being like the funny fat guy versus like now, like, it's like, oh, he's trendy, like he's fit. Do you find your voice is different on stage?
No, because I'm not. Because you know why? Because I'm.
Are you worried you're going to get too good looking?
I'm not fit. No, that will never happen. I will always.
You're going to be one of those comics like, oh, it's so hard to be good looking and for people to respect my sense of humor and not just think I'm a model walking on stage.
Yeah, I'll always look like dock worker George Carlin. Don't worry about it. But I didn't. You know what it was is that might be the first person to call me trendy, and I can't thank you enough. I've always tried to. I'm like, oh, what I've been trying to do lately is I'm still, I don't know, a good chunk of the same person. But and so instead of talking about having fat guy jokes, which I was trying to phase those out after a while anyway.
Yeah.
But I had a few intermittent fasting jokes or whatever's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm still basically the same guy. I'm skinnier and I might have better clothes most of the time, but like I still feel almost the same when I'm on stage. But I do, it's actually an interesting question, because I think there's part of me that's like, I have to rely on the old part of it, and I probably shouldn't. So lately I've been trying to do it where, like, let me just say exactly what I'm thinking now about what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think like, you're actually like more old, interesting now like, I feel like it's more unique, your specific story of how you got to where you are.
Yeah, I'm also divorced. I threw that in.
Oh yeah, that's fucking interesting. do you feel... I love a divorced man.
Really?
I love a divorced man. Well, this is new. Like, now that I've been with Dez, I'm like learning the life of like men in their 40s. And I'm like, men in their 40s have just seen some shit. Like, imagine, how are you different from you now versus you in your 20s? Would you date you in your 20s?
No.
And we are putting these poor women, forcing them to be attracted to these fucking guys in their 20s and their squirrel brains. What I'm telling you, they are, because these men who are divorced, they have seen some shit. They've learned from relationships. They know the red flags of things that are bad in relationships, I feel like, or they feel guilty about something and they need to make it up to the next girl. I don't fucking know. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like your divorce helped you evolve as a human?
Yes. 100%. I don't regret it. I wouldn't change anything. I was with my ex-wife for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. We were married for 6, and I wouldn't I wouldn't be like, oh, I would definitely get married again. I have nothing against marriage. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It's just that it made me learn a lot about myself, 100%. It changed how I approach relationships in the future. And I'm in one now that I'm approaching way differently than I approach my marriage.
What advice would you give in terms of a positive relationship thing that has helped you be better in relationships?
Actually saying what's on my brain.
But that's a people pleaser.
That's
move.
A people pleaser thing. Yeah, there's a quote we've said it on the podcast. There's a quote in not to quote an Irish movie, but in The Departed.
We're staying on brand.
Yeah, right. Exactly. In The Departed, there's a quote. I don't know if you've seen it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
There's a quote when he's talking. Matt Damon is talking to Vera Farmiglia, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
And they're dating and it's not going well. And he says, this is going to end, you're going to have to do it, because he says, I'm Irish, I'll deal with something being wrong forever. And that is, will speak to any Irish dude that you run at any, ask Des, I swear to God. But I'm trying to change it. That's what I would have done. I would have just stayed married, because it was this thing like, I did this. It is a choice I made. I'm not going to bring up and rock any boats.
Yep.
My thing in relationships up until now was, as long as you're okay, cool, whatever it is. And then I would have all this, and it would go south because all this stuff inside of me would be like, well, I don't like that. I don't like this.
And
I'll just deal
and that's
with it.
Abandoning yourself.
Absolutely. 100%.
I was
like,
guilty.
To the utmost level.
When I was younger and I would date, I would get to the point where, yeah, you obviously just want them to like you and for them to be happy. So even something as little as like, I'd be like, cold because the air conditioning's too much, but I wouldn't be like, hey, could you lower like, I just didn't want to be any negative,
right
like the
right,
littlest things,
right?
But then I would pull this thing where like 7 months in I'd be like, I don't think I want to do this anymore, and they'd be like, what? And I just it was all in my head, and but like, I mean, it was probably valid things. If I had spoken up, could I had worked on some stuff, yes. And but it was like, I would just keep it in, and then one day I'd be like, I don't like all this shit, and I'm done.
So it snowballed.
Yeah.
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 I think it's the way of doing that is a very old people. I think it's age. I think age you do it. And it's, or that's why early relationships, that happens to them a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. People, one person just like, yeah, I'm done. And then you're like, what? But you're in your 20s. So
yes.
You're like, okay, all right. That was just, that'll chip away at my attitude towards relationships. Yes. But I'll get over it. But as you get older, and back in the day, I think what used to happen was people, like when marriage, you know, marriage is still a big deal. Don't get me wrong, but I'm like I really respect marriage, but I do think that people work on stuff in a way better way now in marriages than they used to. I think it was back in the day, I think it was the thing. Well, I think my parents, I would say, I think there wasn't a lot of things talked about there.
Yeah.
And then things would come out the wrong way. So I think people just like stayed in something they probably shouldn't have.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Cause I was afraid of like those little disappointments where it's like, no, those are, they can't read your mind. And right. It's not this. And also normalizing that relationships aren't two people not disagreeing. It's two people who are actually good at disagreeing or like good at fighting.
Right.
I've been working on kind of this bit. Cause in New York City, I feel like if it's two good looking people who are pretending they're pleasant, like you can be with someone for 6 months easy. It is so easy to just date another good looking person,
right,
and be fake. Like that is 6 months, your life's done.
Yeah.
And then like that you have your first fight and you're like, oh, you're a monster. So it's like, I really push early on, like getting into some fights.
You
like,
do.
Early, well, I joke.
But do you purposely get into them?
No, like, oh, but yeah. My thing is, I didn't do it on purpose. It just, when Des met me, I was like shooting a reality show and I was in like a nightmare situation. So he saw sides of me that like he hasn't even seen since then. But like I was like crying and like,
because the pressure was
big, drama and missing him in a pressure cooker. I was paranoid. I didn't know who to trust, the producers. I was freaking out. And he was like, that's my baby mama. And any other dude I date, I swear they'd be like, oh, you know, she's pretty chill.
Yeah.
And Des like fell in love with like this, like all these weird sides of me. So then I start, now I preach because I have a ring on, so I know everything.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, girls, just take him to the DMV and fucking figure it out. Forget your passport and see how he reacts.
But that's also great because now I'm sure there was like all the stuff that you were going through back then. You were still yourself to a point.
Yes.
So he saw you at the point that you didn't recognize yourself. So that's why it works out so well, because now
he definitely has seen all of me.
Yeah.
And yeah, my biggest fear in a relationship is for them to not for me not to feel like myself in the relationship.
Okay.
And I think it's because I wouldn't always be myself in a relationship.
Oh, that makes sense.
And so I feel like never being scared for people to see sides of you, even the like non people pleasing side, the non perfect side.
Yes.
Just all the, look at us, just
figuring out love.
Just this is a Brené Brown love podcast. Okay, we're going to wrap it up with a game. It's called The Seven Deadly Sins, and it's about to get pretty dark in here.
Okay, let's do it.
Seven Deadly Sins.
What are you greedy about?
That's a really good question. I'm greedy about my... I'm.
When you ask a people pleaser what they're greedy about, you can't, like, yeah. I'll know whatever they want.
Nothing. Zero thing. I'm greedy about my... I was going to say time, but that doesn't even make any sense. Like, I'm greedy about... That's a really hard question. I am greedy about probably like my, maybe like, I don't know.
Like, what do you want a lot of?
I want a lot of.
And it could be like an emotional thing too.
I guess I want a lot of assurance. I think relationship wise, that makes sense. I can say I'm greedy for assurance. I think there's moments where I want to be told that. And that's where the people pleaser thing happens as well.
I'd say my love language is words of affirmation sometimes.
Oh yeah, is that what it is?
Words of affirmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think I want. That's where I've gotten better at not bringing it up myself or going, you okay? Like in my 20s, I was the are you mad at me guy, and I'm not that guy. But I would like the. I guess it would be an attention, maybe attention. Obviously, attention. I do.
Do you give words of affirmation? Yeah, I know. I'm like, so laughter. Let's just get to the bottom of it.
Laughs and yeah.
Do you give words of affirmation as your love language, like how you like to give love?
I probably don't do it as much as I should because I think that I probably, but it's not for the fact that I don't want to. Mm-hmm. It's for the fact that I don't want to. In a relationship, I would think that I was coming off too hokey or too like where it doesn't seem genuine.
That I also feel like a lot of comics could be like that too, with it's like very intimate to like just say like I think you're amazing or something like that.
Yeah.
Which feels so fucking corny and weird for a comic who's always like being
I'm very afraid of coming off corny. That's like I use that word all the time.
I just envisioned you saying the sweetest thing to your girlfriend. She goes hacky.
Even better if she just booed me. Boo.
Oh. She's like Jesus Christ. That's what you had all day to write, and that's what you came up with. Jesus Christ. Oh, also side note. How's your anxiety? How's your depression? Are you more of a one or the other? Are you both? Are you neither?
I asked my therapist once. I said, "There's definitely a spectrum." And mm-hmm. I go, "I'm curious." I almost went to school for therapy, but like, I go, I wanted to find. I'm like, where would you? Because I've been going for 7 years,
that's awesome.
And I was like, where would I lie on that spectrum? And I go terminology wise or whatever or amount, you know, and or like quantified. And she goes, you'd be like a mild depressive. That's what she said, and I believed her, mm-hmm. and I think that makes sense. So that's where I lie. Yeah, I have anxiety wise comes out of career stuff as mm-hmm. far as like. Trying to chase after a certain thing or have like especially now that I'm getting older the finances is like anxiety that's mm-hmm. where anxiety comes from and then the depression that also might be a result of where the depression comes from but
yeah it can be intertwined. Like, a lot of anxiety can turn to depression what's your way of getting out of your depression?
I you know what it is whenever it's happening I'm not active enough. I think I should probably be aware of how I'm feeling more than I do. I think I just go through shit and say shake stuff off mm-hmm. than I should, but I should be like, hey, let me do this to try to so it would probably it's gotta be a food thing going to get I would without me knowing that's what it is. So I'd be, yeah. I'll go get myself a sandwich because I'm doing it because I'm depressed.
Yes.
But I'm not connecting the two.
Yeah,
but now that I'm talking about it, I'm probably saying that's what the go-to would be.
Yes.
Or the good thing is when I do drink, we know that, but I don't drink because I'm depressed. I never drink because I'm depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
I always drink for the social aspect. I'm in a good mood.
Yes.
Want to drink, which is still not the greatest.
But you're not doing beer anymore.
I don't do beer anymore. No.
But do you have to be more careful because the other stuff is harder?
Yeah, that's probably why I fell, because I drank whiskey all night. And I'm like...
You're like, no, I only do shots now.
just an IV drip of whiskey, wheeling it around.
Oh my God. Okay, who are you envious of?
I'm envious of, and this comes to a career thing as well, I'm envious of comics who know exactly who they are and aren't really afraid, and I won't use the word corny for this because I don't think it is corny, mm-hmm. who realize that it's a business and it's a job, and I do that more now of realizing that it's a business, but aren't afraid to like double down on the like, what I'm doing is what I do, and I'm pushing forward with it. Mm. So I know that once again, I'm going to bring this point up. I'm so afraid. Don't get me wrong. Like I think I'm a good comic, but I don't think the thing that's driven me to be whatever good amount of good comic I am now, what's driven me to do that is proving things. Mm-hmm. So I would love to be more,
like self-motivated.
Self-motivated to go, no, I'm good. Like you'll catch me in moments. Like you'll never get a more confident me than if I'm doing well on stage. but the after effect of like treating it like a business thing, I should be really pushing out whatever I can with that, and I'm not. So the envy comes from the idea of like, man, you're just putting it out there, you're not worrying about it. Obviously you're contented in what you're doing, and mm-hmm. I get envious of that.
Yeah, I also find sometimes when you connect your ego so hard with it, it almost like stunts it.
Yeah,
where because like you've been doing it for so long and you just like can't even imagine someone being like, that's not good enough,
100%. Kind of thing,
where it's almost like you have to detach enough to be like, I know I'm good, so I don't care what that fucking person says.
And I don't get me wrong, I have way more moments like that than I used to.
Yeah,
but it's talk about fleeting. It's back and forth. It's
yeah,
it's roller coaster. Like it's I think stand up is a special animal with that, because I think with stand up. If anything, performance or show business wise, is going to be a meritocracy. It's a stand up show in that little bubble of a universe on that night. So many things can happen. Like that's the only meritocracy. It's everything that's happened that night is like its own judge, jury, and executioner. Yeah. It doesn't affect other things. It can help you maybe, but I mean like your success based off that night. And that's kind of how I came up. Like I didn't even think I'd be working in this. Like my thing was I wanted to try it and I loved it for years. You know, I was a huge stand-up fan since I was little. So uh-huh. I was like, I'm not going to be good enough to do it. I just wanted to try it so bad. I finally, after years of not doing it, did it. Cause I didn't start till I was like 28. Uh-huh. But like I full on think that stand-up lends itself. That's where the worry comes from, because when you first start, like it took me years of going on the road to realize, oh, 90% of these people want to have a good time. Because when you start in New York, what you're thinking is, you're my enemy and I'm going to beat you. I'm mm-hmm. going to win this. Like it was mm-hmm. more of a competition. Don't get me wrong, it was still fun doing well. Mm-hmm. But like you were like, I'm going to kill.
Well, and they
I'm
were like, make yeah. me laugh, clown.
Yeah, like you, because you do have New York audiences that were notoriously, they can be great, but they're also like, they can go see a million different things that night. So mm-hmm. you're going in a club in front of a bunch of tourists or a bunch of New Yorkers. There is a thing where you're like, you better know what you're doing. So you do have that mindset when you start in New York. So you're like, I have to get better almost quicker because you started here. You see how it is. Like, it's mm-hmm. like, it's everybody else had the luxury of where nobody was giving a shit about you in Toledo. Mm-hmm. And then you came here already pretty good. But when mm-hmm. you start here, so that's why I'm like that, because I think that I'm so afraid of doing anything now, even business wise, because I'm like, oh my God, I'll lose the competition.
Yeah. I also was working because I used to attach tennis with my ego a lot, to the point that I'd have performance anxiety because I was like, if I lose, then I fucking suck and I'm the worst.
Right.
So I've like actively tried to be more kind of empathetic with myself with comedy, being like, I'm proud of you for doing that, instead of being like, oh, you didn't kill, so you're a bad person now, or like, we're not proud of you.
Yeah.
What were you doing before you were 28 as a career?
I was working random. I was years ago. I was a doorman. I worked construction in Long Island.
The Irish have like this whole doorman. Like I've learned about it recently.
Yeah,
there's an underground society with the Irish.
My buddy's trying to get a building.
Yeah, yeah, dude, it's crazy. The Irish stick together.
They do. Yeah.
So you hadn't like found a passion.
Well, there's Maltese in there too.
Oh hell yeah.
What'd you say?
So you hadn't found like a real passion.
Not at all. And then right before I did this full time, I was doing just a job that I was like, oh, I'll just get into this as a job. It was facilities for an insurance company, which means like you were the guy that got the repairs done in the building. Like you were like just like building manager type stuff, but for corporate offices, like commercial. And I was like, oh, this could, I'll just do this. And then I worked at the insurance company, and then they were winding up. They were like wrapping down the business. And then I went to an advertising agency, and the girl fired me. And but it was actually, I was so mad, but it was a blessing in disguise because I had more time to do comedy.
Yeah.
And I got Letterman shortly there after that. And then I went from there, and then I was able to do full-time comedy.
Do you find that you did better with the ladies once you went to comedy?
Well, I started dating my ex-wife when I was 2 years into comedy. So I never had, I was as an open micer, you're not even, I didn't call myself a comic for a bunch of years. Mm-hmm. I said, if people would ask me, like people from home or my family, that would go, I'm trying comedy. I'm trying to do comedy. Cause I had such a respect for it that my literal first show was a place called Maui Taco on Fifth Avenue. And it was like, you were on a milk crate with a blanket over it with a fake VW bus coming out of the wall. And you're performing in bright neon lights, performing to people who were eating their tacos and other comedians. Like, it was an open mic. Yeah. It was brutal. I'm like, I'm not going to do that and go, I'm a comic. Hey, move over, Jerry Seinfeld. I just performed at a taco place for four people. Like, that's just not happening. I just can't, never, to my deathbed, I will not be.
And you also knew kind of what you aspired to be.
Yes,
which
I
is
knew
good.
A lot about it. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't, afterwards, yeah, like I'm dating somebody now. Yes, I did way better.
Okay, when was the last time you experienced extreme wrath or anger?
Extreme anger.
You're like, I'm just a sweetheart.
I know. You know what? You don't confront these things
you're
yourself.
Like, I'm a Hufflepuff.
No, I've gotten way better. I used to have, I really think it was a long, it was, well, I'm talking like, I'm trying to think of an extreme version. When I was married, I had an issue, a family issue, and I even forget what it is now, that I was so mad about, I punched a wall. But I've been in therapy I was even going to therapy at that point, but I am way more easygoing. I'll get like riled up about something, but yeah, as far as wrath
just
or anger.
Being a New Yorker.
Yeah. As far as wrath or anger goes, that was probably a few years ago, and there was some issue going on with one of my sisters, and I was yelling about it so much to my wife, I punched a wall. So yeah. that was a good amount of time ago. I can't think of anything that I was like, oh my God, I was really put.
But I also think that probably has to do with therapy, because I joke that
it does.
Most guys, the only emotion that they know how to show is anger.
Yeah, that was me.
And then once you comprehend that you're allowed to be like sad or jealous or fret, like, and you could feel those other things,
yeah,
then you don't punch as many walls, because white dudes love a wall punch.
love a wall punch.
I like see white guys at the con, like, why don't you just punch a wall right now before you like go out and just get it over with. You know how the stand has that like little indentation that when you walk downstairs there, yeah, on the wall there's like a little indentation of some white dude who punched the wall after.
Is it really?
Yeah,
after a set.
I don't know who it is, but I know it happened. Oh my God. And it's probably,
you're right. I think that's white dudes do love a wall punch. They absolutely do. And most guys do, because you know why? Because the
by Joe DeRosa,
the, yeah, it probably was. The thing is, it does get it out. Like, that's the old unhealthy way to do it.
Does it? Or are you now like one of my white dude's friends punched a wall and he broke his hand? Because it was like, you got to find the drywall in it. You got to knock first to find.
Have a stud finder. Yeah.
Or you know in your apartment, the punchable wall. Yeah, because there was like a beam that he hit. Stupid.
You have an
dumbass
anger problem if you just make a paper mache wall in your house that you just punch for fun.
Wait, that's hilarious. There's a fake wall before, just to fucking demolish
wall
it.
Try out the punching wall. Just put on a new punching wall. I was the type where, back years ago, in my 20s, and I'd have road rage, and I would punch the ceiling of my car.
Yeah.
And there would be indentations in the ceiling of my car. So, yeah. But That's night and day to what it is. I would never. I've driven.
That's why guys in their 40s are better. I'm telling you, they're tired. They're too tired to even get upset anymore. They're like, do whatever you want. I mean, I can't imagine Des in his 20s. What a hyperactive
leprechaun. God. Criminal.
Be a criminal. Who called him? Someone called him. Did you call him that? You or someone called him the electric shamrock. It might have been
Sean Patton.
Sean Patton.
Maybe. I don't think it was me.
Sorry, I got you confused with Sean Patton.
That happens
in my
all
head.
The time. Don't worry. I've been brought up as Sean Patton.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Okay, when was the last time you were a sloth? So like a lazy piece of shit.
Oh, I don't know. About 45 minutes before I got here.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah. All the time. I would say as an example, maybe during COVID when I got Burger King delivered to my house 3 times in one day.
Oh, hell yeah.
That would do it. That was a moment that I wouldn't want to say in public that I'll say right now.
We are spoiled in New York. Like when you go on the road and you want to get something. Once I ordered McDonald's at like 11 p.m. I was like, this is going to be great. Somewhere on the road, bumblefuck somewhere. And the Uber driver took forever. At one point, I think the Uber driver stopped at the McDonald's and ate himself.
Yeah.
And that, like, I was like, what's going on here? And it was, it took like 2 hours to get this McDonald's.
Oh,
everything
God.
Else was closed.
And it must
We're
be cold.
Spoiled.
Is it cold?
Yes, it was cold. Yeah, the fries were, oh,
but you still ate it.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
This is how you know you love slothy stuff, is that I was in Indianapolis and I was excited because I went to a late night McDonald's with other comics and we went through the drive through. One of the guys was driving. And it was like, this is how you know you're a fatso. Because it was like really, really good McDonald's. Like it was like I haven't had McDonald's like in a year. And I've told multiple people about this McDonald's since that story. Like,
oh my God.
Because it was such a busy McDonald's and such a high turnover. And so like they had to get everything fresh that we had. And I'm like, I haven't had McDonald's since I was like 8 like that. Like I was so excited about
you
it.
You literally go, yeah. Oh, you're going to the improv?
Stop
at the corner.
Yeah.
That's so, I actually had a rowdy Indianapolis when I went there. I got Delta and I went to a club with, there were like girls dancing and one of them like fell. And the club had to like turn the lights on. They escorted her out. It was wild.
Like off of like a rafter? Like she was dancing.
She was dancing, I think, in one of those like, you know, those circular things, like Cirque du Soleil type things.
Oh my God.
It was wild. Yeah, Indianapolis is lit. Yeah. We don't talk about it enough.
Well, I was there once. There was a Ku Klux Klan meeting. In the downtown area.
I have to say, I love the road because I learn about a lot of new places. Yeah. And I think
When you're from New York, right? When you grow up in New York, I'm from Long Island. You're from Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Everything else, everybody's just rednecks. And then you go around and you're like, oh, there's different types of
rednecks. Yeah. I am such a New York snob when I go somewhere. I'm just like, ew, like common folk. But then I realize there's about a 2-block radius in every city that is cool. Like has a good restaurant, a good shopping store. You will find it anywhere.
I think it's a new thing. Because I've been to a couple places. I went to Reno. I performed at a casino in Reno. And I'm like, there must be the same developer doing these things around the country. Because it's always the same types of
businesses. There's a brunch spot with chai lattes and I find it. I sniff it out.
It's their gentrification package. Like it's like... It's like they go and they pitch the town and they're like, this is where all the cool kids
are. We literally need 2 blocks. I originally went to Buffalo and I found it. I knew it. There were like some vintage shops.
The coffee shop.
Yep. The cool coffee shop. There's cool places everywhere. When was the last? Oh, this is a hard one. I'm going to stump you. When was the last time?
You haven't stumped on all of these.
I know. That's why I know you're going to be fucked on this
one. I'm
questioning
my 7 years of therapy.
I'm like, if greedy got you, this is going to be a doozy. When was the last time you let your pride or your ego get in the way of something?
All right. Can I talk about it in general terms?
Yes.
It's a career thing.
Yeah.
Somebody got something big that you know, that like a big career thing, and my ego, they've mentioned it a couple times in front of me, and I have not said congratulations. It sounds small, but it's not. Like
We love a petty king.
It's yeah. Yeah, it was petty. And I know
you go, he looked at me and I just looked back at him.
It's petty. It's really petty, and I'm actually glad I said it out loud, but like I didn't really give you details, but like that's what it was. It was not just being, and don't get me wrong, petty, that's a petty moment, but I normally would try to get over it and do it. I just haven't done it. I still have time. Actually, no, I don't. At this point, it's too late. But so it was that. It was my ego got involved, and I was like, fuck you. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it, and I'm pretty bummed out that I wasn't healthier and did it.
So what do you consider that, like, a people-pleaser moment where you decided I I actually don't want to people please right now, and I want to be
pissed. I think it was just straight up shitty. I should have just done it. People pleaser moment is when me, like the not saying sorry thing, like somebody writes to me and says, can you do this gig? And I write back. I used to write back, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I can't do it.
That's what
but
I do.
Why am I writing? I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, I can't do it. I just, something else. Even if it's a scheduling thing.
Yeah.
And I just can't.
What if you don't have anything going on, but you just don't want to go like all the way to Queens for a gig? What do you say?
I don't say sorry with that anymore. I go, oh no, thank you. I can't. I probably say I can't.
Sorry,
I can't. I don't say I don't want to. I don't say I don't want to. I think that's going too far. Because
you're like, actually, I would rather do one bazillion things over this.
Yeah, I just get really, I go the other way with it. I used to be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Now I'm like, fuck you. But this was just a bad moment that I probably should talk about in therapy. But like, just a bad moment of me putting ego over, just putting it aside and saying, hey, congrats on this. And I'm sorry I didn't do it.
Do you think they're aware you didn't say congrats?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
It was like, because they said it, and like they also had a shitty moment because they brought it up multiple times and then like looked over like, huh? What do you think? And I purposely
they
just,
were like,
I just was silent.
You what?
Like what?
Anything? Nothing. Okay, besides your girlfriend.
Yes.
The question is, when was the last time you lusted over someone? But I like to ask, do you have like a celebrity crush?
I do have a celebrity crush. Yeah, I absolutely. Well, do you mean right now? Celebrity crush?
Right now or before?
Yeah, Selena Gomez.
Oh my gosh.
I love Selena Gomez.
We love.
Yeah.
What do you like about her?
Another big one for me, but I don't know if you know who she is. Maura Tierney. You know who Maura Tierney is? She was on like ER.
She's Irish?
She's American, but yeah, I think she's probably half Irish at least. But Selena Gomez. Maura Tierney, but more recently, because I'm a huge Martin Short fan. And I watched Only Murders in the Building.
I heard that
and
was great. It made great.
Me love Selena Gomez. I always thought she was cute, but I always thought of her as like, she was very young.
She's a Disney girl.
She's the kind of young. Yeah, but even after that, when she was like probably 18, I'd be like, she's so hot. But I'd be like, she looks so young. It'd be weird to say that, which happens, you know. But in that show, she's great in that show.
I heard she's amazing.
Yeah, she's great.
We love
the show is really fun.
And she's also a big advocate for mental health and lupus and bipolar.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, she's a real one.
So yeah, that's my celebrity crush.
Final question for you, for everyone listening. I feel like you've gone through a lot in your career and your identity. I feel like you've had a lot of like you're like the Madonna of comedy. You've just
can I put that on a t-shirt with your name? Yeah,
put it on your website. Yeah, Madonna of comedy. Your like co-worker face.
I can't tell you the fact that you said people said I had a glow up. That was sad.
I think I just said that.
Oh, you
but
said
no, but like that's but what they people, meant.
You
that's
meant,
what
like,
they
the were, amalgam.
Well, I know yeah. Dez has talked about a lot. Definitely people have been like, yeah, like he lost weight, like he's doing well. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he
good.
Seems happy.
You never know what people are saying. You know what I'm saying?
Isn't that what all comics do? I feel like comics come together, we talk shit about other comics,
yes.
And then we try to lean in to see what they've heard people say about you.
Yes.
And then you know when you leave, then you worry they're talking about you. It's really just a sick cycle.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Which is high school.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just adult high school, but all the class clowns in one place.
Yeah, yeah. Just even unhealthier high school.
Yeah, it's high schoolers where most of them aren't in therapy. But we love Sean in therapy. We're obsessed with it. We are obsessed with that. Okay, so final question is, what advice would you give to the little devils, my listeners, on what to do to cope with your hell when you're going through it? I mean, you've been divorced and then had to have kind of a new identity as a single guy later in life. You've lost weight. You've changed your career path. What do you do when you're in your dark place?
Well, in my dark place, I probably just, I think it's a, there was a thing, I saw, it was recently that I saw this and actually kind of think of it now where, it was from some clip from some, I think it was like George Clooney or somebody saying it on something, but it makes sense. It's like the phrase, this too shall pass coming into your head helps a lot. Mm. So if I have those moments, but like I said, I'm very bad at it being, when I'm living in that hell, I'm just like, oh, I'm Irish Catholic. I'm like, I deserve it.
It's finally happening. The reckoning is happening.
Yeah. I'll never recover and I deserve it. So I love these questions because I never I go in therapy and talk a lot, but I but putting it on my
you're like
on
I
my,
kill in therapy. She kill, thinks yeah, I'm hilarious. Destroy
therapy. Oh, we do it at the Maui Taco on the thing. But no, I would say this too shall pass. So I try to think like it's not as a big of a deal. Like the same way, like okay, so or if I'm worried about like all the stuff we talked about, like I had a friend say once, nobody's thinking about you as much as you're thinking about yourself or something like that. Mm-hmm. So like the idea where it's like this will end, this is just a moment in time and there's like it will get better. It probably sounds too cliche, but like I mean that's where I have to remind myself when that's something I used to not do. So yeah. With age or you can take the words of what my dad told me before he died. He said don't worry, it's all bullshit. That's what he said. Which is kind of what I kind of think it's really funny to say it. But
if Buddha was from Queens.
If Buddha was from Queens, it's all bullshit. So it's kind of the idea of where, yeah, nothing's that real life stuff is what matters. That it kind of pertains to comedy as well. Like it took me, the comedy was my universe for so long.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to realize that like real life stuff is what matters. Yeah. And even that is like you can get past stuff.
Well, I do think it's hard sometimes when something happens to me, I sometimes feel like I'm going through the hardest thing. Like I look around and I'm like, everyone else is so happy and like, and I have this crazy, and it's like,
yes,
you have to get the story out of your head that would, because then something happened to me later. I'm like, no, this is the worst thing that anyone's ever gone through.
Yes.
When it's really stopping and having those good general mantras of like, that everyone has gone through pain and that, 100%. And that nothing is stagnant.
I do the same exact thing. Like I've been doing, like I said, I worry about the financial part of this job and I'm bad with money. So like I
just, wait, what does bad with money mean?
I mean, I'm like,
you're
I
like
just,
going
I
to strip clubs, blowing tens of thousands
no,
of dollars.
No, I wish it was that fun. I just don't, I don't save as much as I should. Like don't be wrong. I'm not like homeless, but I'm like, and I just had, and lately I've been having that thing where I'm like worried. I'm like, this month, that's the thing about working for yourself with comedy where you're like, oh, I had to plan out. And my main thing is live stand up. I'm not like, you know, so I, last night, I'll say that this just happened. Last night I got back from Montreal, freaking Austin, and I showed up and I had checks waiting for me from a voiceover thing. And I almost cried. I really almost cried. Because I was like, I didn't think, it was like this guttural thing. I didn't cry, but I'll say that I got so emotional that I'm like, oh my God, I needed this so bad in order to be like, have homeostasis and be balanced, that I was like, I had like a reaction that I did not expect. I was like giddy for about 5 minutes straight that it happened.
Well, also this career is crazy because you don't know when people are going to pay you sometimes.
Yes.
They're like within 60 days, 90 days, it's fucked up. You don't get paid immediately after doing your job. You're just waiting.
Yeah.
And there's sometimes when a bunch of gigs will line up where you don't get paid for a while.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not money that you can count on. But yeah, it's like so when things come in for stuff that's like outside the realm of stand up, I should be chasing down gigs more than I do. And I do a lot of road stuff and I'll get auditions, but the auditions have to be treated like scratch off lottery tickets because you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what's going to happen. So like the stability factor. And when something comes in where you're like, I have momentary stability, you're like, all right, I'm good to go. And I got really excited about it. So,
we love the multifaceted emotions here.
I know.
Ending with tears is pretty.
I don't need to go to therapy. This
appropriate. You cancel. Well, Sean, where can people follow you, listen to you, watch you? Give me all the deets.
Awesome. This was coming out when?
A couple weeks. Yeah.
So you can find all. I'm Sean Donnelly Comedy .com and also at Shawnee Time on Instagram. That's SEANYTIME. And please subscribe to the podcast. It's Brand New Jerks. And we have YouTube for it. Brand New Jerks on YouTube. If you search that, it'll pop right up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then on YouTube, you can watch them. And all your tour dates are on your website, right?
Yes, totally.
Look at me promoting you. Look at me. I'm just your agent now.
Yes, I know. Please help me out.
Thank you guys so much for coming to hell. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.